I think there's a lot of outlets that praise rock star teachers or kind of disparage really bad teachers. I think there's plenty of places you can find, but I don't think there's a lot of places where you can really retreat with other math teachers who are trying and often feel like they're failures. They're not terrible teachers, but they're also not producing the results that, you know, people were hoping for when they walked into education.
And so mathematics is like the language of nature. I think to decolonize it means to go back to those ancestral roots of ancestral people all over the world that knew that. They knew that to live in this world in harmony, we had to create balance.
And I think part of that comes from this like all or nothing mentality. Like I'm all in or it's nothing at all, or I'm gonna make all the progress or I'm gonna make none at all. And that is like the surest thing I've seen where people leave. And then what? Where are students? Like they don't have those teachers anymore because they're already gone.
The way that we use Napantla, however, it means the tension between two opposing realities. So it's something that we understand we're using to navigate between different worlds and never really sticking to just one side.
Well, welcome to another episode of the Todos Mathematics for All podcast. Each month we bring you two episodes on topics related to excellence, equity, and social justice in mathematics education, in line with the mission of Todos. We're just running a little bit behind this time. Our mission is to advocate for equity and high-quality mathematics education for all students, in particular Latina and Latino students. Well, today is one of my favorite topics, teachers building community, teachers supporting teachers in their struggles. In the backdrop of the impending Chicago teacher strike on a beautiful late September day, I had a discussion with two founding members of the Napantla teachers community to learn more about the founding of this community and the stories of these two powerful women of color mathematics teachers. This episode is a bit delayed due to my own health and family member health issues, but the timing of its release now is hopefully very fortunate as we head into the beginning of a slew of holidays that will bring us together with our families or remind us of family members we've lost. As we have been reminded time and again, stories matter. While we bring unique experiences, identities, and motivations to teaching mathematics, we also see ourselves in the stories of others and find community in shared experiences while learning from each other. Today, we continue with that theme of leaning into the tensions and contradictions. We embrace not having answers, and we occupy the spaces in between. Today, we go into Napantla.
My name is Esther Song, and I am a high school math teacher in Chicago Public Schools, and this is my ninth year teaching.
My name is Jerica Jurado, and I'm a math and language arts teacher at a middle school in Chicago Public Schools, and it's my sixth year teaching.
Jerica Jurado and Esther Song are both mathematics teachers in the Chicago area. They're also founding members of the Napantla teacher community. In this episode, we talk about their stories of becoming mathematics teachers, the unique and uniting stories of being teachers of color in mathematics, positionality, and other topics that warmed my heart and stirred me up. I invite you to hear and feel and relate and learn from these two mathematics teachers.
So about 11 years ago, Rochelle Gutierrez was my advisor at University of Illinois at Urbana. And one of the things that I learned was really what is social justice? What is even mathematics? What is even education? I thought those were all things that I had known, but I had to relearn through her program. And she started something called STEM boot camp. Mm. So right before school would start, she had this two-day kind of workshop to focus on what does it mean for us to be social justice mathematics educators. When the program that I was funded through ended, it was the Noyce Foundation, when that money ended, the STEM boot camps ended too. Mm. And So Rochelle, she encouraged me to like continue maybe thinking about doing something like STEM boot camps, but outside of NOYCE. And so that kind of began the first mini conference. It was at a high school in CPS, and there were a few of us that gathered together and just tried to conceptualize and understand what we were getting ourselves into when it comes to mathematics education. So we've done that for a number of years now, having an annual mini conference until last year. That was the first time that we stopped doing those. But yeah, that's kind of the origins of like where we began. I guess a lot of people also ask, like, well, what does Napantla even mean? What is it about? Why do you call yourselves that? So we also wanted to share a little bit about what that meant.
So Napantla literally means the space between two locations. And I learned this from an indigenous teacher of mine, Temachtiani Akashe Yotzin Gomez. And he was helping us to understand the different meanings of words in Nahuatl. It was with that connection that really drew me to this group, to be a part of it. The way that we use Napantla, however, it means the tension between two opposing realities. So it's something that we understand we're using to navigate between different worlds and never really sticking to just one side. So oftentimes in math education, it means that we're looking at the tensions that we feel inside of the classroom and outside of the classroom, taking into account our identities and our values. So being in Napantla for us means that we're doing what we need to do so that we can grow both as people and as educators.
Wonderful. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So can I hear a little bit more about the conference or the conferences that you've had and who came, who was invited, how many strong were you?
Yeah, so the first one that we had was seven people, and it was really just people who kind of came from Rochelle's program and wanted to continue thinking about similar things. We started expanding by just asking other math teachers if they wanted to join and be part of it. And each one of the mini conferences had like different math teachers who focused on social justice in different ways and shared their perspective of what that meant. What ended up happening in one of the last ones that we had was we partnered with DePaul University's STEM department, and they allowed us to have a space for 2 days. And we talked about like math teacher and identity and how do we see ourselves as math teachers? I would say one of the reasons we moved away from the mini conference idea was a few reasons. One was that there were 30 people that came, but there were more people that signed up, and we kind of were having difficulty with like coordinating all the people who are speaking, but then also like kind of ensuring that the people who are speaking, which were great people, we had David Stovall and Rochelle Gutierrez come and join and be part of our group as speakers. But there wasn't as much interest on the side of like attendees to come. So that's something that we've been really struggling with, is like this question of like, we know that there are people who need community, but the way that we're providing community doesn't seem like it's connecting.
So you were saying that like the conference wasn't creating the right kind of space for people to be in community, So what did you move to, and how has that been working? Like, what are ways that you are feeling like you are providing community?
Yeah. So one of the things that we have been doing is making a blog. We just started our blog a couple months ago. And the reason that we chose a blog format was because we felt like it didn't have to be stuck in a specific time or place, that people could still connect with someone's story even if they weren't there at the right time, which, you know, can be really challenging. And the reason that we started the blog was also to present like real and difficult experiences that teachers experience, that teachers can relate to. I think there's a lot of outlets that praise rock star teachers or kind of disparage really bad teachers. I think there's plenty of places you can find, but I don't think there's a lot of places where you can really retreat with other math teachers who are trying and often feel like they're failures. They're not terrible teachers, but they're also not producing the results that, you know, people were hoping for when they walked into education. So we really try to take a snapshot of an experience that holds a lot of tension and show what are we thinking? What are the oppressions that we face? What are the things that we hold on to in a given situation so that teachers can relate and hopefully start building that sense of community that, oh, there are other people out there like me. So that's one of the things that we've been doing. And I'm not sure if this relates, but another thing that we've been really kind of interested in is we ran a math teachers of color community space at ICTM, Illinois Council of Teachers of Mathematics Conference. And I think that there is a specific kind of oppression for teachers of color who are in mathematics that just experience it differently than you would in English or in history or in special ed or art, just that kind of extra arrogance that comes with mathematics when someone looks at a person of color and decides, is this person intelligent? Is this person good at mathematics? Which often in our society are proxies for each other. Mm-hmm. So that's something that we've also been trying to create more spaces where teachers of color can heal and support each other.
And do you have any, I'm wondering, just if you don't feel like sharing any, that's fine, but do you have like any particular stories about the kinds of oppression you're talking about as two women teachers of color in mathematics education?
So for myself, I think one time that I can think really clearly, an experience that I had like in seventh grade where I knew that like mathematics, at least at that time, I felt like mathematics wasn't for me, was I had a math teacher who got really angry really often. And one day he got so mad that we were talking over him that he picked up a stapler and he threw it across the room and it like swished by my head and then two other students' heads. So it didn't hit us, but it went right by our heads. And like at that moment, I knew that, you know, there was some type of power dynamic with mathematics. Like my teacher was also like a white male. And so he didn't understand some of the things that were going on in my life. You know, I lived in an affluent suburb of Chicago. So there were very few people of color at my school at that time. So I was aware of just the levels of interpersonal oppression that there were. So different, you know, the oppression between me and another person. And I could tell like, you know, I'm the one that doesn't have power there and I just have to learn to be quiet. And I feel like some of that also carried over into my experiences then when I became a teacher. So noticing that at different schools, like I worked at a middle school in Lyons where I was, I believe, the only teacher of color that taught math. And so it was a really different attitude there too. And it kind of brought me back to my middle school experiences, because I noticed that it was all about a competition, right? Who could answer the fastest? Who could do this the best? It wasn't about sharing resources. It was about who do you think is the best? And because of that personal level of oppression, there were already a lot of biases that people had that they were enacting on. And so I found it really challenging just to keep hope, right? To believe and that, like, yeah, I'm supposed to be here. Yes, I'm supposed to, you know, work with these other people, and they're supposed to somehow support me throughout the school year, to keep hope, because of the different just kind of ways that they would either exclude me or do things that would kind of undermine my perspective, because I also believe in incorporating real world issues in mathematics. So I know that when I would talk about concepts like the school to prison pipeline, there were a lot of people that thought, no, the students in sixth grade, they're not mature enough to hear about that. But it's a lot of the reality that they're already living. You know, they have parents that are incarcerated. They might have seen someone, like a friend or a family member, maybe an extended family member who's been incarcerated. So I definitely see the levels of oppression at play.
And is some of that, I'm curious, like, is some of that also like between content matter teachers, of like maybe social studies teachers being like, well, I could see maybe talking about that in my class, but why would you bring that up in the math class? You know?
Mm-hmm. Of course. I get that a lot. I get like, why are you trying to talk about social studies concepts in a math class? And to me, the push that I have is, you know, in ancestral times, subjects weren't taught. Like, life was taught, and how you're supposed to live, and you're supposed to connect to the things that you learn and actually use it and live it. And so I found that in a lot of the populations that I've taught, which have been mostly Latino populations, the school to prison pipeline is really prevalent to their lives. And so I bring up that issue of like discomfort, like just because you feel uncomfortable talking about it doesn't mean that I have to feel uncomfortable. You know, I have experiences also of family members being incarcerated, and it's important to bring those things forward and to help the next generation also deal with those problems.
Yeah, I guess what I would add is that there are very few math teachers with Jerrica's background and experience and history. And I think that that is because math education doesn't have a place for people like Jerrica. They have plenty of places for people like me as an Asian American. I think there is kind of this assumption about someone like me that, they're automatically a math genius. And I see the kinds of pressures that it puts on Asian American students when I was working in the suburbs. And yet there's still this qualifier as a Asian American teacher too. It's kind of like, oh, you're good at math because you're Asian American. So we can kind of qualify your qualities for by your race as well. Which I think is, you know, anytime a part of you is erased is, I think, just a really hard thing to experience and to feel. I won't share any of the stories, any specific stories of the teachers of color community circle. But what I did hear as an overall theme was, when someone looks at me, they don't think I'm a math person. And I think that was kind of the thing we heard over and over again in that conversation.
I'm also really curious then what's the sense you are making of how each of your experiences as a student is kind of playing into your experiences now as a teacher? Maybe we've already kind of talked about it, but I wanted to give you a chance to talk a little more through it. You know, are some of the experiences you had as a child like the reason you are a math teacher, you know, those kinds of things?
For me, I definitely think the experiences that I had as a child pushed me in the direction of becoming a math teacher. So I feel like I ended up in teaching somewhat by accident, but on purpose. So I had someone that told me I had a really beautiful smile and that I should be a teacher because I make people feel really welcome. And I was in that phase where I was just switching majors, didn't know what I wanted to be, tried out teaching, and then came across a statistic that my teacher shared at that time. And it was something like, I know it was a single digit figure, something around like 6% of math teachers are people of color. And it just, it struck me, it stayed with me, like, it moved me. I was like, how is this possible? What do you mean this is a thing? And so at that time, I was also taking calculus classes by coincidence just to see if I could hang. And, you know, it pushed me in that direction. I was thinking about everything I went through, you know, as a child, that memory of that stapler being thrown past my head, like, it imprinted on me, like, it showed me how dark of a place that someone could go to and still supposedly be called qualified to be a teacher, be trusted to be left alone with young people in a room and, you know, and be hurting them. And so I feel like I remembered that, you know, I remembered my mom being an immigrant to this country and her raising us as a single parent and always like stressing that we needed to live by our morals. We need to live by our values. And always having that in the back of my mind as I was growing, you know, knowing that not everybody has that, that even though I only grew up with my mom, you know, and she might have not been as familiar with the culture here, she still pushed us to, you know, stay rooted, to become rooted in our values and to always believe in ourselves. You know, I think of family members that I had that were incarcerated, that some of them didn't get that chance to move in that direction. And some of them who were lost to gun violence as well in Mexico. So I think those experiences for me really helped push me in that direction and say, I'm going to become a part of this statistic, but I'm going to do it in a way that I'm going to push this number up. And so as I began to walk the walk of teaching social justice math, I came into contact too with an indigenous community called Matinaukali. And so from then, I have, you know, connected myself and I now identify as Nahuatl to my students. And I also have a tattoo that takes up about half my arm. That's a Nahuatl tattoo that I also want to show proud. You know, they won't see many teachers like me. And I like to remind them of that too. You know, I'm going to be the one and what I teach you is going to be because I believe that we should live math and we should see math everywhere. We should learn how to analyze the world around us with math and learn how to live our best life so that we can push it forward for the next generation.
Yeah, I would say that my story is in many ways very different. My parents are immigrants and I'm an immigrant, but I came when I was quite young, when I was 4 years old to the States. And I remember school being a very confusing place. I don't think I really recognized how confusing it was, but having a home culture that was very different from kind of an individualistic culture, and recognizing in myself, like, how I had learned to grow up hating half of who I was in many ways. I think that I had always thought, I never knew it at the time, but like, wow, I wanted so much to be white. I wanted so much that my facial features would look white, that my eyes wouldn't be so small, that that when I hung out with other friends, that they would be white. I would hope for those things. And kind of growing into like, and finding other people who helped me realize, wow, you know, who you are and your identity is not wrong and is not, it's not something you should be ashamed of, I think was such a good thing that happened to me. And part of that happened to me through college and post-college. But, you know, more than 18 years of life thinking, I wish I was someone else is such a terrible place to be in now that I kind of can reflect on that. and it definitely affects my teaching now, like as a teacher thinking like how can I create a space where, especially probably because I know more the heart of an immigrant, like especially for students who are coming from immigrant backgrounds, like how can they feel a little bit more like this is their home, that they don't have to change 100% of who they are. At the same time, recognizing that some of my practices are very like white centric and very individualistic. And that's like a hard place to be. Like that is Napantla. It is like recognizing, wow, I hold both of these truths. I hold both of these values. And I feel like I can't just pick one. So yeah, that's a little bit of kind of the way that I see things.
Believe. Because one of the things that I'm hearing from both of you, I think, is you know, the tensions in being rooted in your own identity, but at the same time working in a system that is very much about erasing who people are, especially in the name of white, Western, Eurocentric mathematics. But we become math teachers also because there's something about math that we do find very useful, perhaps, or that we're very connected to, or, you know, because we want to resist the stories of who's supposed to be in mathematics. And the mathematics, perhaps, that we teach in schools versus if we could ever really kind of truly be educators who are really fighting oppression or really pushing back against pushing forward a decolonized kind of, you know, ways of thinking.
So we, a group of teachers and I taught a unit on decolonizing. That was an interdisciplinary unit. It was between me as the math teacher, social studies teacher, art teacher, language arts teacher, and a science teacher. So the five of us were teaching the end goal of how do you decolonize yourself in a semester. And so I think that, you know, one of the answers to that question is that you need a team. You know, when I first started teaching, I was in that solo boat thinking I had to teach everything at once in math. And so it was either something had to give, right? Or it was the math skills, or it was the understanding of oppression and how it works and the different, you know, intricate details of it that a lot of people don't understand, you know, because you have to be well read to really understand the different levels and the different types and be able to pick up on those interactions. So I found myself juggling everything until, you know, I had this team of people that were down to do that work and were down to align units and skills. And so we did it in a lot of different ways. You know, we talked about prison industrial complex as a whole, looking at who goes to prisons, why were prisons designed, you know, where did the first police officers come from? Well, they were slave catchers. And that's originally where that idea started. And so it was important for them to look at that, you know, why is the military industrial complex here? Where did the military start from? And getting them to ask these questions and also looking at their diet and talking about how do we also decolonize what we consume? Because it's one of the first ways that you get people to start being more complacent is in what they're consuming. Not only, you know, through their mouth, but also with their eyes, with their ears, what they're listening to, you know, what they're smelling, what they're inhaling. So we had to analyze these different parts. And so mathematics is like the language of nature. And I think to decolonize it means to go back to those ancestral roots of ancestral people all over the world that knew that. They knew that to live in this world in harmony, we had to create balance. And math is about finding that balance for not only yourself, but for the larger community. And for the community not only that's there now, but future communities that will also take your place.
And like, I think like kind of Jerrica's previous responses, I have a very different one. I think that definitely looking at math in terms of power and identity versus access and achievement. I think I've really spent a lot of focus on access, and I've also felt a lot of tension about focusing on access. So some of the things that I've focused on is like creating more pathways for students of color to get to calculus, or in class we'll talk about how interest and exponentials work using banking. Those are ways that students can get access to understanding money with math. And there are parts of like the traditional math curriculum that I think are beautiful, because I think there is beauty in mathematics. I think, you know, even thinking about calculus, I think that's the first mathematics class that really drew me as, wow, this is something that doesn't exist in life and yet can be conceptualized and then exist in real life. Like, that seems crazy to me. But when I think about it too, I think, yeah, what is the point of all of this? What is the point of any of this? I honestly come to that every day. I think like, am I teaching something that matters in the end? Will they have more access? Maybe. Does that matter in the end? If there are future places in which they're like students of color and people of color just kind of get sidetracked and sent another way. Even if they have the skills that, you know, were demanded of them, but suddenly the rules change. I don't know. The answer is I don't know. I feel like in some ways I'm kind of a cog in a machine too, and I'm just chugging along. Yeah. Less hopeful.
What I'm hearing, what you're saying, Esther, is also that like you can grapple with these things. It doesn't mean you have to have everything figured out. And it also doesn't mean that having everything figured out means you can definitely take action in a certain way. It's just kind of like, maybe you figured out now what you hadn't thought about before, you know? Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty encouraging to, for us as teachers to just like realize that like, it's not that you are always moving towards being some more perfect teacher. It's that it's complex. Identity work, as we all know, and you just kind of you keep making your way, hopefully having principles that ground you somehow, right? Like that's the, and those principles could likely come from like family, community, what brought you into teaching in the first place. But you know, you don't have to have all the answers, right?
Right, and that is one of our goals as an organization, is kind of providing some of that encouragement that, you know, it doesn't have to be like you have everything figured out. It doesn't have to be that you already know the end goal. I think a lot of people I know who kind of entered into the profession with this, like, you know, stake in their hand saying, social justice mathematics education, it's going to happen in my classroom. Just don't worry about anything else. I've got this down. And then a few years later, kind of watching them leave. And I think part of that comes from this like all or nothing mentality. Like I'm all in or it's nothing at all, or I'm going to make all the progress or I'm going to make none at all. Mm-hmm. And that is like the surest thing I've seen where people leave. And then where are students? Like they don't have those teachers anymore because they're already gone. So we are trying to encourage teachers like, hey, we know it's hard. It doesn't have to be all or nothing. There are ways to make progress without, you know, without yourself like dying in the crosshairs.
I would love to kind of end with some of your just final like thoughts, words of encouragement or words of accountability for teachers. Perhaps in particular, since we're still kind of near the beginning of the school year, for people who are finding themselves newer to teaching, what are things you want to say?
I'll say this. Last year was my first year at a new school. It was my first time at a neighborhood school, which is a school that does not test to get into the school. Like my previous school, you had to test to get into it. And I came in kind of thinking I knew something, and I came in ready to change the world. And I found instead a slow burning death, both in my classroom and in myself. And I wanted to quit a lot of times. I can't say the number of times I wanted to quit because I don't remember, because I couldn't count them all. But part of that had to die. Like, part of this belief that, like, you have to be this certain way and look this certain way, I think in me had to die. And so my kind of encouragement is, like, if you are going through a really challenging year, or if you already see it in September, you're like, this isn't it. The rest of this year is already shot. My encouragement is, like, yeah, it will suck. There are a lot of things about teaching that will suck. But I also know that if you stay in it, you'll find yourself a new person. You'll find that you are a different person, and that the people that you are interacting with on a daily basis, like, those people are just people. They're not like out there trying to get you. They're not that angry. They're not that happy. They're not that sad. They're just people. And when I'm realizing that teaching is really just interacting with people. So that is kind of my encouragement from last year to this year.
So a piece of advice that I would give someone who's thinking about getting into the teaching field, or someone starting off this year, is definitely take care of yourself. Like, number one, you won't want to. You'll want to spend all the time at school planning. You want it to be the perfect lesson, the perfect unit plan, the perfect whatever, but it's never going to be perfect. There are always going to be variables that you did not predict that are going to happen. And, you know, you just have to take care of yourself. Find a group of people. Find people who will take care of you also and remind you of your greatness, and also check you when you're being messed up. Because, you know, we're humans too, and our emotions will take over us, and we might get angry at something that maybe we need to step back and humanize that student and remember, hey, this is a young person that might not have the skill set to deal with this. How can I provide them with an opportunity to build that skill set so that they know how to work on this, versus me taking it like, oh, you're offending me, you're annoying me, or you're just doing this on purpose to get under my skin. You're remembering that, like Esther said, you know, everyone's human, and we have to remember that humanity in us and other people to be our best selves and to really get out there and give it what we can. And, you know, just the biggest thing is just take care of yourself. It takes some time to learn. That means, like, finding a good school too. Find a place where people love and appreciate you. I've been to 3 schools right now, and it's my 6th year teaching. So I would definitely say, don't stay somewhere where people don't appreciate you and don't appreciate your work. You know, people get into the teaching field usually because they really love teaching and they love working with young people, and they love seeing that magic that happens over the year, that you see them grow like a little plantita, a little plant that you're just watering. You know, they're already coming with their seed. They are the seed. They're the little sprout already. And you see them evolve, grow their new flowers for the year. It's a really beautiful thing. So you just want to make sure that you feel good. You take care of yourself so you can witness that and be happy with yourself as well. And set that example for young people too, that they got to take care of themselves. And it's an important part of life that we all have to learn. That's how we make it to the end.
Well, there's really not much more for me to say after that conversation. The Totos Podcast is a production of Toto Mathematics for All and features the music of Bay Area artist Vector Hold. Special thanks to Esther Song and Jerrica Huralo of the Napantla Teachers Community. Be sure to check out their blog, which is linked from both where this podcast is listed and our website. So signing off until I talk to you next time. Seguimos luchando. Adios.
Yay!
First podcast.
Yeah.